始まるざますよ。
行くでガンス。
フンガー。
まともに始めなさいよ。
ミラクル、ニックネンビン、ミラクル、ニックネンビン。
Yeah, this is Anime Diet Radio, episode 4, or maybe we can call it 3.5 because Jeremy unfortunately couldn't be with us today, but he will be with us next time, he says.
Yeah.
So, we just have a couple of news items to share, and actually, if you want to talk about a couple of shows that you've watched this week, that's good.
Sure.
I've seen a couple of episodes of Claymore this week, so I want to talk about that.
Oh, good deal.
So I want to update.
Anywho...
Why don't we talk about anime?
Yes.
Let's go on to the regular news section. All right, Ray. Why don't you talk about our first... rather amusing news item today.
Oh man, this is the thing that news is supposedly made of. From Anime News Network, TV Tokyo Program crowns king of foreign otaku. Yes, man, Japanese TV have many fun shows that it's even if you don't understand shit about it, it's still great to watch. this program called TV Champion 2, I guess there was a predecessor called 1, basically put 5 foreign otaku folks together in a series of challenges to crown the foreigner Akiba King on May 10th. And, well, I guess it's not ironic, but it's an interesting coincidence, or maybe not, that this currently airs after Naruto Shippuden. Previous episodes had crowned the king of rapping. Can you imagine Japanese men rapping or Japanese women rapping? No, I don't know. That wasn't Japanese.
Even in Samurai Champloo, they rapped in English. So,
oh god, yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm from Japan. I'm a little off. I'm all, and I'm going to work. I don't think so. The queen of shoujo manga. Oh, the king of games. Oh, the best crane game player. And the Japanese king of Akiba. But anyway, the contestants for the foreign Akiba King episode included Happy Link Japan, I guess trademark, Ardith Carlton. I presume that's a... Ardith is a man or woman?
That sounds like a man.
Yeah. Okay. And American exchange student Jonathan Underwood, okay? Mm-hmm. A French video game otaku Sebastian Jarry, or somebody knows French, shoot me, but anyway.
Sebastian Jarry. You got it pretty much right. Sebastian.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they don't say Jock, they say Shock.
Jarry.
Says you have Shock Strap.
It's like J, the J in French is a J, like kind of like our G actually in English.
Wow.
J. Like.
I always call it shock strap. Anyway, finally, aspiring Russian idol Jenya, again, someone knows Russian, please shoot me, and the eventual winner from Hong Kong, yes, he's Chinese, voice acting student Chen Gafai.
Yep.
He's, basically the challenge composes naming tunes, singing them, talking about anime counterparts, solving tasks of sites at Akihabara as finding a maid cafe with only drink for the cafe as a clue. And for the champion stage, the two finalists, shocking, was Jenya and Chen Gafai, answer trivia questions and complete tasks, dressing up as character Char as Noble from Mobile Suit Gundam and reciting his dialogue. And well, fittingly, the winner was a man. I'm sure that's a man's name. And he's Asian. Oh well, what can I say? Eat your hearts out! Other foreign otakus.
Well, he was also a voice acting student, which probably helps him in like the whole Gundam acting part.
Yeah, well, he's still Asian.
Yeah, that's true.
So there. I don't care. He's still Asian. You know, and guess what? He's still Chinese, son. No, yep. I don't hear any Koreans winning. I don't hear any Japanese. I don't hear any Japanese winning it. I don't hear any American. I don't hear any white folks winning it, or black folks, or anyone else winning it. So,
Wow.
Damn right.
I think this whole idea of an otaku test is an awesome idea.
Yeah.
What would you put in your own version of an otaku test if we wanted to make a program like this ourselves?
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to seriousness.
Yeah.
Seriously, I would do a Jeopardy sort of thing. Probably. I'll basically say a line, and you all have to say, who is so-and-so? Or at least what show, or I'll basically say a line, and you'll have to tell me which show it's come from. And or some sort of reference. For example, what does red mean? And then the person will have to go, oh, you know, red makes you three times as fast. From Gundam, Mobile Suit Gundam, Char's as Noble Suit. I'll recite part of Char's speech, and you'll have to say where he said it in Char's counterattack. These are classic examples. Or I could go like, I will have another task. I guess you'll have to go to Akihabara. You have to get certain items.
Right.
You'll have to get a manga of, let's say, Naruto. That should be easy, right?
Right.
And then you'll have to get a figurine of Moti, which is a little bit involving. And I guess you'll somehow have to get a... Oh, I don't know. Maybe in the art book on Eva. I don't know. It's like you're asking me on the spot, so it's difficult for me to come up with something really, really difficult.
I'm trying to think of something right now. Yeah, because
Something like Amazing Race. You have and in Akiba, that would be extremely difficult because I think people are really shy there. And you're gonna ask them, can you please let me borrow your bag so I can show this person? Person say no. I just got this stuff. I'm not letting you borrow it.
Asking otaku to do physical activities.
Oh my god! Yeah,
oh, this idea is interesting.
Have them go to the game center and try to defeat each other.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of something that will have to make them run through the streets of Akiba. That would be. I don't know. If this site would be in a costume.
Oh yeah, dress up as Haruhi.
Yeah, make them do the Haruhi dance. That's actually that's a good one.
You know, that's been done on Akiba streets before.
I know,
and the station, yeah.
Yeah, I know that's probably been done. I mean,
no, you saw that video, right? Basically, they were doing the dance, and the police comes, and then in less than 1 second, this was the shocking part. Less than 1 second, everybody was all normal again.
Wow,
it was that fast. Less than a second, like nothing happened. It's like they were just doing the dance in the middle of it. The police come up, bam! Everybody just. Went back into the crowd. Like nothing ever happened.
Huh. Wow. Otaku are really docile, I guess. They don't
No. It was so fast.
Wow.
It was like lightning fast. The last second they were like moving around like and having the pose and the police comes and bam. They just disappear into the crowd.
Wow.
That's like spy work.
Wow, you're right. Sounds like they planned for that to begin with. It's like they know that eventually the police would be coming and they kind of prepared something so that they could just slip into the crowd. Yeah.
Well, then again, they're in Akiba. I think it'd be pretty easy for them to slip in the crowd.
Oh, yeah. Crowd full of nerds. Yeah, no kidding.
Crowd full of tacos everywhere, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, for my test, I would go for the obscurity factor. Like, right. I would probably go for, number one, anime music. Anime music is not always something easy to pick out. And so, probably, you know, you could play something for like 5 seconds and see whether they can identify who did it, from what anime it's from, or something like that. Or alternatively, do like a Seiyu challenge where you could play like a sound clip for a few seconds.
Oh, God.
And see
yeah.
who did it. And like the harder ones would be like voice actors or actresses who are playing something that is normally out of character for them. And so that
yeah,
would be
like Saber Marionette J.
Right.
And the character Tiger. You know who she played? She was played by
who?
Inoue Kikuko.
Oh wow, interesting. Yeah.
Tiger is like a really mean voiced person and sounds like very very harsh, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's played by Inoue Kikuko, who plays about Dandy.
Right. Exactly. So.
And the teacher from Onigai Teacher.
So she's playing against her typecast roles. So that's a really good thing to put on a quiz, as a hard question is to it would be like a test of how well these people really know their anime and how well they know their seiyuu.
That would completely be a hardcore question, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because, like, the stuff that they put on this TV Tokyo program is... I would actually consider it moderately challenging, for the most part.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
reciting
I think
his dialogue is, you know, whatever.
Well, that's a little hardcore. It reminds me of that scene in Otaku no Video. You remember that? Where there's that, like, salaryman who's trying to deny his otaku past. And then the interviewer, like, brings up a picture of him in his char mask, and then brings the char mask with him. And he's, like, and he's cowering.
Right.
And he's cowering. It's like, no, I only did that once. That's not me. No!
Six-yo! I can't believe he didn't crack down and just go, oh, six-yo!
Yeah, I know. Wow, it's been so many years since Otaku no Video came out. It probably seems really dated now.
It's completely dated. It's like a prophecy.
Right.
It's like a freaking prophecy.
Yeah.
Like, who the hell would have thought... Who the hell really thought, like, otaku back then would be such a phenomenon?
Yeah.
84.
Yeah. I mean, it was basically Gainax sort of poking fun at themselves the whole time. And I don't think it was actually really profitable. I mean, it was basically something to hold them over until Eva came out, because Anno at that time was deep mired in his funk and depression. And I think if you noticed the person who produced Otaku no Video, of course, it was our friend Takami Akai, the man who got busted on Tuchan the other day. And
the guy who doesn't smell, who doesn't smell like ass.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like to smell ass.
Yeah, so... things have certainly changed. I do remember the days when Akihabara was not, in fact, the otaku district. The last time I visited Japan, which was well over 10 years ago, it was still primarily the electronics place, mainly the place where you could find lots of computer parts. And it had not quite yet been taken over by otaku, and or with anime and manga otaku, rather. But now I think apparently everything is totally different now.
Well, they're trying to change the image. Like, they put, like, a lot of bigger shops there.
Oh, that really?
Sells a little bit of both, but mostly electronics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they prosecute, but we scatter and survive, right?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, yeah.
Well,
they do prosecute, but, yeah. Well, I like your ideas. I mean, like, just come up with, like, people come up with, the say you like. See, I didn't think of that. I was like, damn. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's, Yeah, those are just some kind of quiz questions. I wish I could come up with something funnier, though. Because I'm sure there's plenty of humiliating things we could ask otaku to do and turn it into a really funny contest. Because the Japanese game shows are experts at humiliating contestants.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you know they have this show where, like, you'll have to drink beer, you could keep drinking, and they have this thing, like, keep pumping, like, keep lightly punching your stomach. It doesn't hardly punch it, but whoever doesn't go to the bathroom at the end gets the money.
Oh, it's sort of like it's a variation on an eating contest, actually, in a way. It's like whoever pisses last is the winner.
Yeah, exactly. Who doesn't go to the bathroom at the very end? You have to keep drinking. And then, you know, there's the light machine keep on punching, you keep on hitting you in the stomach, right? They keep on forcing you want to go, and whoever doesn't go gets the money.
That's incredible. Wow. And I was thinking of all the game shows where they basically, like, shock you with electric shocks or torture you or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Shock you. Oh, they actually have an otaku drinking game, man. Like in Gundam Seed Destiny, every time you see a gym gets blow up, you have to take you have to drink, like, take a big gulp or drink a glass or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's you can do that with just about any show that has any, like, really identifiable, like, quirks to it.
No, I mean the same gin gets blown up for the trillionth time.
Wait, the same exact animation too? Like they reuse the same frames?
You've never seen Gundam Seed or the Gundam Seed Destiny.
I only saw the first few episodes of the original Gundam Seed, so.
Oh, dude, watch Seed Destiny and you'll be like, isn't that the trillionth time that the gen got blown up? what's gonna happen to the pilot for? He dies for the trillionth time. You know, how many times does he have to reincarnate? You know, like.
I think he has like 30 lives, you know, when you enter the Konami code in those old like Konami video games in the 80s. Up, up, down, down, left, right, VA, VA, start, you know, you got 30 lives. That was the only way you could beat some of those games, like Contra.
That's right. Contra was impossible. Basically, you die like the enemy slightly
catch
you a little bit, you die.
I know. I've actually been playing Gradius on the Wii, the original Gradius, and the
you
up up
play
down
that on the Wii.
Yeah, the Wii. Oh yeah, you didn't know about the Wii Virtual Console?
Okay. Oh, you have a controller. That's right. I was gonna say, are you gonna like hold the controller like your pilot or something? I was going, what the hell?
No. What you can do is you can flip around the Wii controller and it becomes like an original NES controller. And so it's got the D button, it's got the A and B buttons, and the start and select button. So
yeah.
You can play all the old 8-bit Nintendo games on it now. It's really awesome. I just beat Castlevania the other week, which was a game I last played when I was 10 years old. And
wow,
yeah. So
actually, I managed to beat the game too. Wow.
Yeah, Castlevania is pretty tough, and there are no secret codes in that game. So you're pretty much on your own. And
exactly.
Anyway, that's enough video game nostalgia for today. And while we go on, I'm going to go on and talk about the next news item, which is again about Hideaki Anno.
Oh man, let the flame war start.
Oh yeah, so a number of you posted some interesting comments about the article that I wrote a couple of weeks ago about Anno, and we appreciate all your feedback and all of your attention. Any attention is good attention for us at this moment. But I should add the personal disclaimer that while I really do like Evangelion and I appreciate the work that Anno has done, I have no truck with his political or social views. I am not going to defend what I do see as his hypocritical comments, both about otaku and about his half-baked dependency theory about America. And that's the last I'm going to say about the subject. So before I go on, and anyway, I want to move on to something a little bit more amusing about something that apparently happened to Anno the other day. He is apparently going to be directing the Japanese dub of a Danish puppet film. Now, that news title itself is already enough to cause some snickering both in me and in you. But apparently, it's a Danish puppet film by the name of Strings. It debuted at the Cannes Film Festival in 2004. It's directed by Anders Ronald Klarlund. I don't know how to pronounce it in Danish. I know a little bit of German, but Danish I know is very different. And apparently, it's attracted a bunch of animation fans among its fandom. And apparently, Anno liked it so much that he has decided to direct a dub of this particular puppet show. And it's going to have an all-star cast of Japanese actors, singers, and comedians. Apparently includes one of the members of SMAP, who it's a famous
Shingo
Katori, Tsuyoshi Kusanagi, comedian Hitori Gekidan, actress Miki Nakatani, and another radio personality named Katsuya Kobayashi. And let's see what the film is actually about. I've never actually heard of it. The Karo, the country's king, is writing a farewell letter to his son, Haltara, to whom he is entrusting the throne in the hope that Haltara will be able to achieve that which he himself could not, making peace. With this hope, the Karo draws his sword, severs his headstring, and dangles lifelessly from his remaining strings, until his brother, Nezo, steps out of the shadows, throws away the farewell letter, and severs the rest of the strings. Haltara sets out to find his father's murderer that his uncle, Nezo, leads him to believe is the leader of their long-term enemy, the Zerets. Disguised as a simple peasant, Hal journeys out into the world of which he, son of the Karo, has seen very little. Hal is taken prisoner by the Zerets. Sorrow, the Zeret commander with the terrifying mask, is the person whom Hal is determined to have his revenge. Hal falls in love with a beautiful woman, only to find out that the woman he loves is actually Sorrow cross-dressing, his father's murderer. Hal escapes. In love, filled with hatred, and confused, he collapses in the desert. Here, he's taken prisoner by his own people's slave collectors. The truth finally begins to dawn on him. The enemy is not who he thought it was. And finally, troops are finally on the way to oppose Sorrow's army, and Hal must escape in time to save both his people and the enemy that he had thought he hated, and rescue the woman he loves. Is that me, or is that a rather convoluted plot?
That sucked, man. Who's the woman he loves again? That's his uncle, right?
The woman he loves is the murderer of his father. So
it's a real girl, right? Because he sounded to me like his uncle cross-dressed into a woman, and he fell in love with him.
Oh, I see. The commander, Saro, the one who, yeah, I think Saro is actually has always been a woman, but we didn't know she was a woman until she takes off the mask, apparently. Yeah, okay, so it's one of those deals like at the end of Lord of the Rings where,
And you cut off the strings, you know, it's like, so postmodern.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
It's like Team America. Did you ever see Team America?
No.
Yeah, Team America is another puppet show, and they totally make fun of the fact that these are puppets. And yeah, one of the things is like, well, I don't think they actually murdered them by cutting strings per se, but you could see the strings, and they moved really clumsily, and they made fun of the fact that they moved really clumsily, and yeah,
it's like Final Fantasy, the spirit within making fun of if he were to make fun of himself or how slow that character's heads move.
Yeah, and then like making fun of the Final Fantasy victory music, which I thought was the only funny part of the whole.
No, I'm talking about this.
Spirits Within. Sorry. That was Advent Children. I got confused.
Yeah, see, Advent Children, by then, the CG technology is way more advanced.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch Spirit Within these days, you'll be like, they're moving their heads sideways, and their lips are moving as fast as I'm moving mine.
I remember hearing about how in Spirits Within, they like spent all their time basically rendering the hair, like all the individual strands of hair and how the hair moved, and like the hair blowing across the face and blowing across the eyes, and so they were all like all the little like teaser videos that I saw were always about like blowing hair, and so.
Oh
yeah.
Do you know did you know that? Oh my God, this author like and his assistants. Spend a lot of time drawing the hair of the women.
Yeah, that's what I heard. That's why I remember reading about how they spent an awful lot of time on that, and that was like a point of pride for them, was that they were
hair is difficult.
Hair is difficult, yeah. And so and I'm sure CGI hair is even more difficult. So
yeah, don't want to go there.
But anyway, back to the original topic that inspired this. Anno is directing a puppet show. What will he think of next? Gee.
Oh, dear.
Yep.
I hope the main author, the prince, doesn't hug his knees and say, you know, I'm just a puppet on the string. What can I do? I don't want to go on this journey. You know, I don't want to get into that thing. I don't want to get into that giant puppet. I don't want to ride on that giant puppet. I don't look at all these strings. Giant puppet has eyes staring at me.
I'm so worthless.
I'm pathetic. I can't go oppose these guys. Leave me alone.
Now, wait, hang on. I know Anno actually added a Japanese like subtitle to the title of the film. I'm trying to figure out what it was. It's just called Strings in Danish. Like that's just
Journey of Love and the Ties That Bind.
Oh my Lord, that's so verbose. I actually wrote a story called The Ties That Bind. Actually, it's a really portentous title. And it's a really bad pun considering that it's a puppet show called Strings.
Yeah, well, in Japanese it's called Aito Kizuna no Tabuchi. Mm-hmm. So there.
Huh. Okay, there you go. Cool. Oh man, so yep, that's basically what's new on the Anno front. Actually, I think they also released the official subtitles for the four EVA movies that are going to be coming out over the next couple of years. And apparently what they've done is that they've named each act after the traditional names of acts given in Kabuki theater, I think it is. Yeah, they decided to do it that way. They kind of structure it like a Kabuki play. And that is interesting. That's a little different. And whether that actually, you know, of course, is going to add up to anything good is another question altogether. But that is the newest news about Evangelion that I've heard. Anyway. Anyway, on to our last news items for today. Just a little bit of licensing news. And ADV Films, the Microsoft of anime, has licensed four major titles. Most of them are Gonzo titles this week. They have licensed Red Garden, which is a shoujo-esque horror suspense drama entirely set in New York City. Licensed Welcome to the NHK, which was one of my favorite shows of last year. It's a, I would call it a dramedy, It's a comedy drama that is about the lives of otaku and hikikomori. The magical girl comedy Majikano, which I think has lots and lots and lots of fan service. And finally, the war drama Pumpkin Scissors. And so, now you've seen a little bit of Pumpkin Scissors, right?
Oh, yeah. It's it's practically saying post-World War I Germany. At least that's the impression I got.
Oh, kind of like Full Metal Alchemist, that kind of setting?
Yeah, not quite, because he got tanks, but they still talk about imperial system,
right?
And nobles and all that. Basically, after the war, the empire, we all know what country that's referring to, basically is in shambles. So basically, the third section, I believe, of the army intelligence, you know, like basically they are bringing about a healing to the war. So it's kind of like a peace healing sort of thing. Like, it's kind of hard to define in English, because I watched it entirely in Chinese. So it's kind of like a peaceful healing, but they see wrong, they try to right it. That's all they're doing.
Oh, so they're like, are they basically like peacekeepers? UN peacekeepers?
No. They're only helping their own country, first of all.
Oh, okay.
And secondly, they see wrong, they go right it.
Oh,
you know, like if the nobles take all the resources that's given to him that he's supposed to distribute to the locals, and just hoards it, they go there and try to arrest his ass.
Oh, so they're kind of like kind of like Robin Hood. No, not Robin Hood, because Robin Hood was an outlaw. So
they're actually a branch
of the military. Okay, so they are. Well, I guess that's sort of like the police, sort of. I guess
they just run the riot. They're like the run the riot unit,
basically. The Justice League. And let's call them the Justice League.
Yeah, okay. But again, they're like official. They're government, they're military, right? And basically their unit is nicknamed the parade unit. It's like a Matsuri. It's just like people it's just for people all think it's for fun. And of course, the leader of the unit, who's actually a noble a princess or of the nobles herself, that absolutely disagrees, and she's basically devoting her life to right all the wrongs and helping all the common people.
Right.
You know, but the character that really stands out is this quiet giant, like he's very, very tall. And basically he's one of the secret troops that, you know, the Empire holds a lot of secrets.
Right.
Secret tanks, secret fire, secret like machine guns, you know, secret weapons. And he's a secret human unit troop that can destroy tanks. Basically, nice. They go up to tanks and uses huge ass gun and blows the tank up. Like right on the tank, basically he put the gun to the hole or to the window, and he kills the pilot inside and blows up the tank.
Wow,
he's a tank killer. And the tank, and then like basically when he lights it, like the flip, not to spoil too much, but when he turns that ghost light and then pull out his gun, he basically becomes like demon. And it used to be a whole troop of these guys. Basically,
so he's like the last of his breed or something.
I'm not sure if they all died out, but he's the only guy we get to see, at least so far, from his unit. And basically, everybody in tanks is afraid of people like that, because they're basically invincible. Like, explosions next to them doesn't really do them that much damage. And then, you know, like guns seems to just miss them. Cannon fire seems to like just do nothing to them.
So is he basically invincible?
He gets hurt, yeah, but he can't die. He's practically invincible. He gets hurt a lot, sure, but it doesn't seem to do anything to him. But in real life, he's a really mild, really, really nice person, and he feeds like stray cats. Like a really, really mild and a little slow, and almost kind of shy. Like scratch his head sometimes and kind of go like,
But he's a killing machine.
Yeah, but when you turn on that light, it changes something completely different. He's a very likable big guy character, I mean.
Right. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they kill him off later on in the show, actually.
I don't know. The title sequence seemed to suggest that he and the Major will have some romance going on, maybe.
Interesting. So, do they ever explain why the show is called Pumpkin Scissors?
Yeah. Well, it's not really a spoiler, but they say basically all these nobles and like the people who does bad things or whatever, they have a skin as tough as pumpkins, so they need scissors to cut them off. I'm not kidding. That's basically what she said.
Okay. Huh. I guess it makes about as much sense as, actually, Marmalade Boy makes more sense.
I thought, yeah, exactly. Mm. So,
where do they get names like that? Man.
Yeah, what about Bubblegum Crisis?
Well, no, Bubblegum Crisis sort of makes sense, too.
I know, but I'm saying, though, Pumpkin Scissors, Bubblegum Crisis, Marmalade Boy.
Yeah, they all have something to do with food, don't they?
Well, Ranma 1.5.
Okay, well, Ranma 1.5 does sort of make sense, because it sort of explains, or begins to explain the concept behind the show. I think that's important. Okay. And, right, and, like, actually, one thing I remember reading from back when the website was still called Scattered Cells, when I was ranting about the way they changed anime titles into English, was that apparently, yeah, the original Japanese title of Ghost in the Shell is not actually Ghost in the Shell. Like, it doesn't translate to Ghost in the Shell.
No, it doesn't.
But Ghost in the Shell is actually a direct reference to a kind of philosophical concept that in English, and it's actually a very fitting one. So that's actually an example of a good, very good example of how to translate something into English. And
I think they thought of Ghost in the Shell.
Right.
I don't think it was American or English people thought of it.
Well, it's actually, I mean, there was a book that was written in, I think, the 1950s called The Ghost in the Machine, which was about the mind-body problem. That's what it's called in philosophy. It's the, how do you relate the, you know, your human identity with your body, and how much of it is in your brain, how much of it is in your body, that sort of thing. And and that's basically the problem that Ghost in the Shell deals with. So, so that's basically Pumpkin Scissors, right? And it's described as a war drama. So am I correct to describe it as actually a serious show?
Or is it's it more a serious show.
Right.
It has a little bit of humor every time, like, Major gets pissed off, and the sergeant, is it sergeant, and he gets, Gojo, what is it? Not, I guess sergeant gets a little, like, slow. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, Major gets angry, and sergeant goes a little slow, and, like, some other things, but yeah, it's a serious show.
I see. Oh, okay. And the other show that I know about that I've watched, that their licensing, of course, is Welcome to the NHK. I actually partly started Scattered Cells, the original incarnation of this website and this podcast, partly just so that I could write about Welcome to the NHK. I was finishing up the show just around the time I started this whole project in December 2006, and it's definitely one of my favorite shows of 2006. I kind of tied it with Honey and Clover as the most emotionally satisfying anime experience that I had. It's really a terrific comedy drama. It's one of the very few examples of a very successful, I think, blend of comedy and drama in anime. Most shows in anime that try to start out funny but then become serious don't usually pull off that blend really well. Most of the time, they usually start off really, really goofy, and then it really lurches into a totally different direction, and it becomes really ultra-serious and melodramatic. Classic example is Trigun. The first half of Trigun is totally goofy, bordering on dumb, and then it becomes really bloody and dark and serious, and it's like they're two totally different shows. I think NHK is one of the few that's relatively consistent in its tone throughout. It's got a really cynical and dark sense of humor, and it always maintains that dark sense of humor, but as you get to know the characters, you know, it becomes, you get to care about the characters very, very deeply, especially if you're a shy, introverted otaku. The character, it often hits really close to home, at least it did for me. It was, I think that's what, I actually would compare it to, if you liked Evangelion like I did because of its portrayal of depression and portrayal of the introverted mindset, NHK would be kind of your next step up. It's really, because it's set in the real world, and it talks about otaku issues and everything really directly, but it portrays all those internal struggles and kind of the mindset of those kind of people very, very sympathetically, and also really quite brutally. There was like some really harrowing scenes, especially with this one kid who's really addicted to MMORPGs, and it's really, really sad what happens to him, and... Yeah, you go.
But he becomes a character in Dot Hack Sign.
Well, that I believe is the fantasy version of what happens in MMORPGs. But this is what really happens. He basically Yeah, I mean,
Just don't tell me.
I don't. It is something of a spoiler because that's kind of in the second half of the show.
But
Welcome to the NHK is a very worthwhile show. It's probably the first consistently good Gonzo show that I've seen. Most Gonzo shows tend to drop the ball by the end. This one does not. And the manga is already being released by Tokyopop, actually. And I've heard the manga is even more dark and cynical.
And the main guy watches a lot of porn.
No, there's porn in the TV show as well. But in the manga, it's lowly porn. It's explicitly lowly porn.
Right.
It's even more depraved in the manga. So that's something I actually... Remember, we were considering showing it in our anime club, and eventually we refrained from it because we felt that some of the themes in the show were a bit too much, were a bit too rated R. And I was honestly, I do feel it has a show with a lot of redeeming qualities, but it does get emotionally raw later on. Just to warn everybody.
Those of you who didn't know, Mike's club is family friendly.
It's PG. We have a PG-13 standard.
Wow, yeah. Mike's Anime Club is almost family friendly.
We have some under 18 folks in our club, and so we do feel that we are trying to cater to a broader range of people and trying to introduce people to different kinds of anime too. So, yeah.
I know I'm preaching to the choir, but for all these people who think anime are bad for the kids, come to Mike's club and witness for yourself. Sounds like shameless promotion, eh?
Go right ahead. I'm a co-organizer. Yeah, but we do try to be, well, not exactly. The term family friendly is not always the, when we're talking about anime.
Oh, that was sarcasm. So
I know. Yeah. It's we're talking about anime. I know it's sarcasm, but when we're talking about anime, we do always, there has to be a little bit of leeway compared to what some people call family friendly around here in the United States, cuz Japan just tends to be a little more lax in general about a lot of things, so...
They show a lot of butts!
They show a lot of blood, and butts, and all kinds of other things. So, yeah, but we do try to maintain some standards. That's pretty much it. So, anyway, that pretty much does it for the news section, and I don't know if you want to talk about any...
Let's have a little spring review.
Yeah, just you just posted a spring review, actually. I just saw it today.
Right. And I, since I didn't put pictures and part two on it, I'm thinking I'll just animate my words. I'll just talk about part two, and you can talk a little bit about your impressions as well.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about Claymore, right?
Yeah, I want to talk about Claymore, and actually, I also want to talk about another show that I just remembered I watched this week. I watched the first four episodes of Mahime, and I want to talk about that because.
Oh, okay. It's not quite spring roundup, but yeah, sure.
No, it's an older show, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess I'll just get it started. Well, I talked about some of these shows on my website, on the website, so I'll skip that, and I'll go with the show that I haven't talked about. Oh, let's see. Lucky Star. Yeah. Lucky Star. After watching five episodes, I'd say I'm very impressed with Hirano Aya, as usual. Like a true professional, she does her job well, and it's a show aimed exclusively at otakus. You know, for the first time anime watchers who knows nothing of the references, don't bother. I mean, they'll maybe laugh like maybe 10% of the time.
Yeah.
Well, unless he's a gamer, then yeah, okay, because you know she does team up with, Kona does team up with her teacher for MMORPG, so that is funny.
Yeah.
And the teacher online still goes, oh, did you do your summer work? You know, if you don't do this, I'm gonna check on you every day. She said, oh crap, I gotta see you every day online too.
That's great.
Yeah, I
remember that. I think I'm caught up on Lucky Star as well, so yeah.
Yeah, it's a great show. I mean, I'll have to say though, the character dynamics isn't as good as School Rumble is good, but Azumanga Daioh, it's not as good as Azumanga Daioh.
No.
Azumanga Daioh, everybody plays as a team. They really plays as a very like a professional comedy team. It's like a school drama, it's a school sitcom.
Yeah.
It's like a school sitcom and in New York City. Well, in this case it's probably it was set in Tokyo.
Yeah,
versus Seinfeld. That would be it. I think Azumanga would be closer than Lucky Star.
You've got a point there, because both Yeah, because Lucky Star, one thing that I complained about Lucky Star initially because I wanted it to be more like Azumanga Daioh. I wanted it to be character driven, and I think for me, yeah, I'm slowly warming up to it. I think I had to realize that it's not character driven humor. It's otaku reference driven humor, which
exactly.
it's a different kind of comedy, and so and basically, yeah, Kona is basically the lead. She's pretty much the one who drives almost all the jokes, and yeah, and Hirano Aya pretty much is holding down the ship. She's pretty much doing pretty much the engine of the whole thing, except for like
exactly.
the last, except for the little lucky channel part at the end, which honestly I'm getting kind of tired of it because it's pretty much the same joke every time. But
well, yeah, it basically kind of shows a little bit of how like a child star in Japan.
Yeah,
you know, you have child star in states receive a lot of pressure. Well, it's the same thing in Japan.
Right, so. Right. It's a whole, you know, contrast between the ultra cutesy, you know, squeaky voice and then the really cynical, you know, deeper voice. And
yeah, her mom takes her money basically.
Yeah. It's just like what's his face? Gary Coleman. Gary Coleman's parents stole all the royalties that he got from Different Strokes. And
and they bought all the things, right?
Yeah, and Gary Coleman is basically broke. I mean, he basically has no money.
He's like, a security guard.
Yeah, he's really, it's pretty sad what happened to him, but yeah, that's an extreme example of what happens to child stars.
Well, but anyway, yeah, so Lucky Star, I like I said, if you consider yourself a member of the Genshiken, yeah,
yeah,
by all means, and you know, and for those who understood what I said, you'll probably like the show enough.
Mm-hmm.
You might not. If you really think Hirano Aya is annoying, then you might not. But I'm thinking it's a safe bet that if you think you should belong to the Genshiken, or at least close to belonging to it, yeah, watch it. I'm sure the Genshiken member will love it.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you do know there is a second season of Genshiken that's coming up, right?
You mean like the TV series?
I believe so. I believe it's coming in the fall.
Woohoo!
Yep.
All right. I've seen the manga up to like it's almost it's pretty much ending now. I mean, the manga already ended in Japan, but you know the Chinese version is up to like volume 10, which mm-hmm. is nearly the end. But hey, I'm all for it.
There is a second season of Genshiken coming up. There's a second season of Zero no Skyma. There is a second season of Higurashi no Nakukoro ni, and those are all shows that I'm looking forward to. So,
I don't know anything about the third one, but yeah. I'm looking forward to the first and the second.
Yeah, Higurashi is the, two words, killer lolis. It's the postmodern horror anime featuring lots of really cute-looking harem comedy-type girls. And,
wow.
And it's really, really, it is one of the most dark and twisted things I've ever seen in anime, actually. So it's, yeah, if you don't like that sort of thing, don't go there. Because, yeah, it gets really twisted and later on in the first season. It's so messed up, but... Yeah.
You know, after reading all these other articles by other bloggers, I'm wondering, like, about you. Because you just said you'll just watch dark, lowly stuff, right? What does that say about your inner psyche, Mike?
well, let's not go there.
Let's not probe
the dark recesses of my mind.
The power of the dark side.
Nobody knows what darkness lurks in the hearts of man. The shadow knows. Anyway.
Come to the power of the dark side!
This is not the Jedi you're looking for. Anyway, that's enough Star Wars geekery event.
That sucked, anyway. And you want to talk about Claymore or Maihime?
I'm going to talk about both. Because I'm going to talk about Claymore first, because okay. I'm not that far in Claymore, first of all, I need to warn you. I'm only up to episode 2. And, yeah, it's really... It's not quite the show that I was expecting. It is definitely, yes, dark and bloody. That is pretty much as advertised. It's a show, again, for people who haven't watched it. It's about basically these demon hunters called Claymores. And they themselves are half demons, and they're all women for some reason.
They all look like supermodels, too.
Yeah, they're all really tall women who are very nice looking. And they all tend to be rather... Or at least the main character tends to be rather cold on the outside. And then one day, as she's going in a job, she's basically sort of like the wandering samurai who goes around from village to village, like, and destroying the demons. And the problem with the demons is that they disguise themselves as humans, and they're indistinguishable from regular humans until they start eating people. So one day, this really, really annoying, whiny little kid, teenage kid, who could be Shinji's older brother, shows up, and apparently his parents were eaten by a demon, and so he begins to follow her around like a lost little puppy, and she's of course rather reluctant to take him on until she ends up rescuing him. And then they began kind of that standard, it's actually a fairly standard staple of a lot of the older Japanese samurai stories, the wandering samurai with the kid. And so
the lion and the cub.
Yeah, the lone wolf and cub, I think. And
lone wolf, yeah.
Lone right. wolf and cub. And that's basically how the thing starts. And apparently all the claymores belong to some secretive organization. That's where they get their marching orders from. And we are given hints that this secretive organization has some sinister purposes up their sleeves, just like every other anime that involves secret organizations. And we are starting to get some hints of some character development for the main Claymore woman, Claire. And so it looks actually relatively promising. It is definitely a different kind of show than Berserk, which is what I initially compared it to. It definitely follows that, again, the lone wolf and cub template so far. Though, am I correct? I remember I skimmed over one of your reviews of one of the later episodes. Did they introduce a different kid, or do they introduce like new characters
that joined Entourage? Well, first of all, it's a flashback, but I don't tell you it's a flashback.
Oh, okay.
Basically, Claire remembers why. Basically, you get a reason why Claire will take someone on. Take someone alone.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, Claymores don't take anybody alone, period. But she began to... It's basically her flashback of when someone took her alone, when she wasn't a Claymore.
Right, right. And we see all these flashbacks of, like, when they were new Claymores, she bonded with this other Claymore. And...
She wasn't a Claymore just then, when it first started.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. She was a little girl. So.
Oh, I was thinking of episode 2. You know what happens at episode 2. I guess I don't want to spoil it, but but yeah, basically the Claymores have to do some things for each other when certain things happen, and could be the vehicle for some pretty decent drama. So that's so yeah, it's actually a fairly promising action type show with some bloody demon action. So if you're into that sort of thing, you know, come check it out. I think it's on episode 6 now or 5. The last one 6. I downloaded was 5, so...
Okay.
So I think maybe by the time this podcast comes out, it'll probably be well over 6. So, yeah. And finally, the last thing I want to talk about today is an older show. It's not really related to the spring season. It's a few years old. It's a show that I'd heard quite a few things about, but I never got around to watching. So I'm actually watching it on DVD. I'm Netflixing it. And it's Maihime. And Maihime is a show... done by Sunrise. It's it's not a B-Train show, but it does feature music by Yuki Kajiura. So so her very characteristic type action type themes show up. It's been described as a feminist magical girl show, in that the director explicitly wanted in an interview to put females in roles that males would normally take. And I think we sort of see this with the main character, Mai, especially in her relationship with her little brother. The role of the little brother in this show is normally done by a little sister, with the Oni-chan complex. Oni-chan. But in this case, the roles are kind of reversed. And
yeah, but you just said the feminist magical girl. Magical girl show used to be aimed at women.
Right, yeah, like Sailor Moon, for instance. It was very much aimed at girls.
Exactly, and this show is not a shoujo show, though.
It definitely is not. Women's show. It has fan service, so it's definitely not. And it's
dare we term it a shouri, perhaps?
Oh yeah, I think so. Especially, I've only watched up to episode 4 because that's what all the way the first disc goes up to. And the fourth episode has to do with underwear. And so yeah, underwear stealing little like monster. So I don't think that's exactly a staple of your typical. Shoujo magical girl type show. So yeah, and especially I don't know if you've ever seen some of the extras, the omakes features that come with My Hime. They are basically full of all kinds of like fan service and nudity that you could never ever get away with on TV. So
I talks about her breasts growing.
Yeah, that was the first one. There's other ones too. Yeah, and and it seems like that kind of show at first. It's kind of goofy. It's got some pretty well animated action, but this is also one of those shows where I suspected something was going to change later on. Mm-hmm. I could tell by the mood of the closing song that it was a bit. It was probably going to be a bit more serious later on. Mm-hmm. I could tell that there were hints that just by the way the character arcs seemed to be heading. Like, I think what it is that Mai has to make a contract in order to get the big dragon to bond with her. Mm-hmm. That she's going to give up the thing that is most important to her. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to come back to haunt her later.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that will. And I am told that later on this show becomes very serious and very, very well, good drama. And so, in contrast with its sequel, Mai Otome. But I don't know if you've seen that, but...
I got bored.
Okay, yeah, there you go. And so I am looking forward to getting the DVDs from Netflix. I've only, again, seen the first four episodes after I return all the Battlestar Galactica DVDs that I rented. So Battlestar Galactica is an awesome show. It is probably the best science fiction television show on American television right now. I highly recommend it. Just another plug for something non-anime. But if you're an anime fan, you're also probably a science fiction fan, so I'm just betting on that. So, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, do you have any last things you want to add before we close today, Ray?
Yeah, just a little bit on writing. This won't take long. Basically, sure. You know how I said I'll never watch Giant Robot again? But, well, it just turned out I was looking for something that's heroic. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't see anything shows heroic. And I'm not watching Gigantic Formula because of the Japanese nationalist shit that was in the first episode. I'm just kidding. Like... Whatever, Japanese think Chinese are on the rise, and Chinese are on the rise. What are you going to do about it? Anyway, so writing. It's it has one similarity with Rossifon. Well, probably Rossifon was taken from the original writing, in that an ancient civilization created the giant robot, basically.
Yeah.
And it's a guardian of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Similarity number two. We see Mishima Reika, Midorina Akira. in writing, and she, let's see, has dark hair, cute, pretty, and she blends into the class. Although I have to say that, for Rossifon, she's basically not there. Like after a second episode in the classroom,
right?
You know, and it's a completely different setting. And then in this setting, you don't have Tokyo being the only part of the world that's visible to the main character. No,
right.
The whole world is still intact, perfectly fine. And the incidents are happening in Japan though only. But the whole world is there. And then you have this girl named Midorina Akira, and she's a transfer student.
Mm-hmm.
We have transfer student plot again, but and she's there.
Mm-hmm.
She's quiet. She doesn't say much, but she seems to react. According to the main, Saiga Junki, who's the main character, she reacts in coordination or in junction or in sync, in one of those Junki reacts a certain way, and she kind of reacts a certain way, especially when it concerns the big robot Raiding.
Mm-hmm.
So I have my guesses that who she might be. I'm sure some people who watch it already guessed it.
Yeah.
But she's the Mishima Reika character in this show.
I see. So actually, if you're interested in some heroic type shows, there's Toward the Terra this season. And also Gurren Lagann, which is a little over the top actually in how it does it, but it's still rather amusing. And Gurren Lagann is also a giant robot show, but it's kind of tweaks a few things about the giant robot genre.
No, I don't have. I'm not sure if I'll. I'll think about it.
Yeah.
But so writing has very good CG animation. It's done by Studio IG.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gotta be good, and the Golden Giant looks very nice. And my guess is they'll make some sort of a large action figure for it later. I wouldn't be surprised if they do.
I'm sure they. I guarantee that they will.
Yeah.
Giant robot show started because entirely just to sell toys. I mean.
I guess so. Yeah. Of course, 70s was different, but
I mean, Gundam was the first one to try to have a serious story. And that's why it was so revolutionary, if I remember correctly. Yeah, I mean, Gundam was the... Before that, they were pretty much all, yeah, just made to sell toys for Bandai. But then, you know, Yoshimiki Tomino thought, hey, what if I actually put some real drama in it? Like, real science fiction drama. And that's how you got Gundam.
Well, okay. Yeah. But, yeah, so far it's a good show. It's kind of slow-paced, and, you know, if you're talking about relationship part, well, Junki's relationship and Akira's relationship, well, their relationship isn't really developing. So, so far, we're basically, it's a little episodic, you know, from the discovery to getting used to a robot, to the character complaining, yeah, I don't really want to do this anymore.
Right.
And to, like, he's like, okay, fine, I'll accept it, but it's a pain in the ass on my life.
Yeah,
you know, it's a bit slow. Yeah, it's a bit slow. Like, finally for the I think they consulted real physics, real like they consult military personnel for sure. So the physics is realistic. But I can tell you, I like Rastafon's like unrealisticness much better because the character, the machine, the robots don't, and the giants don't move as slow.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rastafon, they're moving at pretty good speed.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's not realistic. In here, you know, they move like real giant size objects will react.
So they're really slow. They do a lot of damage when they hit things. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of like the other mecha show this season, Boku Rano, which is very Boku Rano is basically the Evangelion of the season. It's very mysterious and kind of dark and slow.
Don't they have that like for every freaking season?
Yeah.
Almost.
Boku Rano is actually very well done so far, though. It's I'm really scared now though that it's going to turn into Saikano. Because that's where it seems to be heading. It's going to get really nihilistic and really dark for dark sake, and I don't like that. So I hope it doesn't go there, because so far it's actually really well done, and I really like it. But it's
Boku Rano.
What happens is that there are 15 kids, and each episode or two, one of the kids is randomly chosen to become the pilot of the mecha. And when they get chosen as the pilot, some computer voice says, Boku Rano. And then that's how you know you're chosen.
Not Gantz.
Yeah. I don't know what Boku Rano means. Do you know what it means in Japanese, if it's a word at all?
Boku is for like young like boys to some teenage guys to some like shy, I think, type of man. Well, they refer themselves as Boku.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like it for younger people. But, you know, it's hard to exactly translate it.
Okay.
It's just a term for for men.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when they're singing songs, both men and women do it. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean the characters in Boku Rano are both girls and guys, and so they can all be randomly chosen as pilots. So I don't think it's just guys who are piloting it, but it's Boku Rano has a theme song which is called Uninstall, and the word uninstall shows up all the time in the lyrics. So it's kind of silly, even though it's actually a really good song. It's really serious too, but they keep going uninstall. It's pretty silly.
Is it like some like network administration geek who knows how to make music made this stuff?
No, it's actually sung by a really good singer.
Who wrote the lyrics?
I know, it's just so, it's like computer geeky or something like that.
Oh,
I know there's one guy in our club, he posted a thread about Boku Rano, and it's like, now I have an official theme song when I'm uninstalling software.
Yeah, when someone calls in on the cell phone, that song just rings.
Yeah.
And his coworkers, you know, I'm gonna kill you.
Put that as your cell phone ringtone. Oh my lord, that's horrible. Jeremy.
Yeah, actually, I know we're going. Yeah.
Jeremy actually makes the his cell phone ringtone is the theme song to what's it, Mushishi, which is actually, I don't know if you've seen Mushishi.
Yeah. We talk about Bugmaster, remember?
Yeah, that's right.
Call when I had your Bugmaster.
Well, actually, Mushishi's theme song is, first of all, it's not even a Japanese song. It's a song by a Scottish singer-songwriter named Ali Kerr. And it's actually a very good song. It's a very quiet little acoustic number. But anyway.
Okay. I know we're dragging a little long, but I have two words to say about El Cazador. Stop screwing with us.
I know. Wait, have you gone further? I'm only up to episode 6, I think.
It's on 6.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
It's stop screwing with us.
Yeah, sounds like they're... Do you know how many episodes they're going to do? Do you know?
Probably 24.
That's what I figured.
The new full length is 24 now, not 26.
Right. Yeah, if it was going to be a 13-episode series, it's like, you know, they really are dragging their heels too long. But if it's a 24-episode series, yeah, sounds like they're taking their sweet time, aren't they?
It's not going to be action, I'm sure. It's going to be a doc hack style where people talk all the time.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, it looks like it's one of the bigger disappointments this season, I think. Particularly, you know, given the track record of this production team. And it's, well, you know, you win some, you lose some.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess that pretty much does it for this week. This episode's actually already been over an hour long, believe it or not. And we've had plenty of things we could talk about today. So this is Anime Diet Radio, Episode 4. I'm your host, Michael Huang.
And this is Raymond Q. The daily recommend dose for El Cazador is Zip.
I give it a 25% so far. Anyway, here we are, signing off. Goodbye. See you next week.